Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with so much news, such an overwhelming amount of data and information to try to digest this morning, we're definitely feeling the frustration and the curiosity and the hunger for information and context from you on this Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and AIG economic situation. So for this last little bit of the show, we're just going to open up the phones for your questions and comments for John Authors. He's the investment editor at the Financial Times. He writes several columns, one called The Long View, one called The Short View, and we'll ask him about both to be sure. And you can call in 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Anybody from Lehman Brothers listening right now? Are you all going to HR, trying to find out what your severance pay is going to be like? Ha, ha, ha. Or anyone else affiliated with Lehman Brothers or Merrill Lynch or AIG, will give some of you first preference, 212-433-9692. But anyone may call or post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we welcome John Authors, investment editor at the FT. Hi, John. Thanks for coming on WNYC today.
I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about. Certainly can't help any Lehman employees with what their severance pay will be, unfortunately.
Oh, but you can't give them the exact. Well, will there be severance pay if they go, if the company is going into bankruptcy? Will they get severance pay?
That's an interesting question. We still don't know the answer to. I've heard different versions of that throughout the morning. Obviously, an extremely painful subject if you're working there.
Absolutely right. What if you are an investor who has a Lehman Mutual Fund?
If you have a Lehman Mutual Fund, that shouldn't be an issue. You mean one that's managed by
Lehman? That's right.
It's difficult to see why that would be any issue at all.
If you own Lehman stock, that's another matter. But
if you own Lehman stock, then you expose yourself very directly to the risk that this would happen.
Now, what?
But the mutual funds are held. Held separately, and it would be a fairly major scandal if there was any reason why that would be a problem. Then there certainly shouldn't be any reason why that would be a problem.
Short view, the Dow is down about 280 right now. This is, I guess, about consistent with what we saw in the European markets today. Is this good, bad, or indifferent compared to what you would expect? What is it an indicator of other than itself?
To be honest, compared to my expectation, the U.S. markets are actually doing somewhat better than I would have expected. We still haven't actually traded below the lowest point that the S&P 500, which is the single most important indicator, reached back at the time that the first credit backstop for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was announced back in July. And the percentage falls we've seen in Europe at one point had been worse than 4%. I think part of that, or a very important part of that, is the perverse reactions you see when you have a crisis like this, that the oil price has come down very dramatically, partly thanks to Hurricane Ike not being as scary, as bad as some people had feared, but also partly because this news that we've had today implies that there will be less demand for oil, and that does have an effect on stocks. So that there are sort of odd perverse effects going on, but I'm actually surprised thus far that we haven't seen stocks sell off more.
Here's a question from our comments page. It says, the Wall Street Journal reports Lehman Brothers, facing a refusal by the federal government to bail it out, announced this morning that it intends to file for Chapter 11, Chapter 11 bankruptcy for its holding company only, while its investment bank and asset management operation will continue doing business as usual. What does that mean?
It's just a reference to the way in which bankruptcies are organized for the financial sector. I'm not quite sure what the question means.
Well, I guess they're asking what it means that the
funds themselves are a separate entity that operate in a different way from the actual capital of the bank. And that's what I was saying. There should not, therefore, necessarily be a direct line to be drawn between investments held through them as investment managers and the actual capital of the bank that they got from shareholders in the bank.
Adam in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Adam. Adam, are you there? Whoops. Let me try that again. Do we have Adam on the air?
Adam in Brooklyn, you're...
Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I want to ask the investor here. Seems that we're getting more and more bank failures. Is this the worst, or are we expecting to see some more bank failures in the year to come?
I'm never going to actively predict a bank failure. If you believe the prices available currently on the market, it's plainly very much of a risk that there could be more to come. At the moment, you certainly can't rule that out. You have to look, I guess, at the key measures to look at. First of all, what kind of collateral damage happens in the next few days once we find out who has got particular exposures to Lehman, and then more broadly, it's what's known in the jargon as the second order effects. Plainly, this kind of damage will mean that there's less finance around in the economy. If that means that you have continuing falls in house prices because there are more people out on Main Street losing their jobs, failing to pay their mortgages, then plainly that will increase the pressure on the banking system and makes the risk of more bank failures that much higher.
And so the question comes, what stops that corrosive cycle? And here is Alan Greenspan's answer to that question from ABC This Week yesterday.
And indeed, it will continue to be a corrosive force until the price of homes in the United States stabilizes. That will induce a series of events around the globe which will stabilize the system.
And you think that will happen early next year?
That's my best guess.
Did you hear that clip? What do you think about that prediction?
I personally agree completely with the notion that if there is any one indicator of all the indicators one could choose from around the world that we need to look at more closely than any other, it is U.S. house prices. If U.S. house prices actually manage to stabilize as early as the first quarter of next year, then that would certainly mean that this crisis will pan out towards the better end of what we're all fearing at the moment. In terms of his prediction that it would actually bottom out that soon, that's a little on the optimistic side. I would say, talking to the people I would talk to, I think he would probably find it more common to suggest that we won't hit rock bottom for house prices until the second half of next year. And obviously, that who turns out to be right is very important here.
Mike in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi there. I guess what set me off on this was the reports this morning about the worst crisis since 1929. I was wondering if your guest could put this into context in terms of the estimated valuation lost, okay, by this crisis compared to the $3 to $5 trillion that disappeared during the tech bubble at the beginning of the decade.
I actually didn't hear all of the question, but
he's concerned that there's too much hyperventilating in the media and among some analysts as to how bad this is, and wants you to compare how much valuation is actually being lost, how much equity compared to the tech bubble bursting.
Off the top of my head, because I haven't run that number, although that's actually quite an interesting number to run. The overvaluation we had in 2000 was epic. I mean, even more ridiculous than what has happened in 1929. And I'm fairly confident, off the top of my head, that the kind of money that was lost from 2000 to 2002 in terms of total market value of U.S. stocks is considerably greater than the amount of money that's been written off stocks in the last year since we saw the peak last fall. I don't think that's the relevant question, however. a lot of that money that was written off in after 2000 was money that should never have been written on in the first place, if you get what I mean. That was by any measure a ridiculous overvaluation. It was money that only ever existed on paper, and part of how the fall happened was when the companies that had come to market started to try to actually sell their shares. So
it is unbelievable. It's just unbelievable that it got to this point. And so shortly after the tech bubble, I mean, there were people, as the housing prices were going up and up and up, who were saying, look, it's obviously a bubble. But the people who are supposed to be the experts who actually work in the investment just had rose-colored glasses.
Well, and you cited Mr. Greenspan earlier. He was one of the people who was suggesting it would be a good idea to get a variable-rate mortgage.
That's correct.
Let us not forget. I think my own personal take is I'm trying to come to some clarity about what's happened is that this is the end of what you could call the decade of moral hazard. Moral hazard's this notion that if the government comes there to bail out people in the private sector, then you will get irresponsible risk-taking. If you look at the kind of money that has been generated in Wall Street and in the business of mortgage lending over the last 10 years, in many ways, in 98 to 2000, it was you could see blatantly overpriced stocks. In the last few years, it's been a question of just a sheer expansion of money that plainly shouldn't be being extended to people. It wasn't so much the paper values of stock that was overvalued. It was the real money being sent out into the economy that plainly had no business being there.
So Stephen in Princeton wants to argue that Obama faces more of a moral hazard at a policy level from all this than McCain. Stephen, go ahead. We got about 20 seconds for it.
Hi. Well, I was very taken with your interview last week with the editor of Harper's, whose name I forget, who said that Obama's biggest bundlers, contributors, and fundraisers are all from the investment banking and hedge fund concerns, which are even more risky than the investment banks in a way. Or more willing to take risks, supposedly. And what your person on just now said, that, you know, there was money invested in really bad things. And the question is, with Obama getting all this money, can he be trusted as president to do the right thing,
right,
to regulate the industry?
Now those banks are definitely into both campaigns, but that's his largest, what the publisher of Harper's, John R. MacArthur, said, that was by far the largest segment of Obama's bundlers, and I don't know how McCain's bundlers compare, whether, you know, he's got much less Wall Street money. It would be hard to imagine that he does. But do you happen to know, John, and we've got 20 seconds.
I'm not going to touch the politics of the issue, if you want to avoid a candidate who has been funded by some of the Wall Street money that's come through in the last 10 years, you're going to have a problem finding anybody to vote for.
Yeah.
I don't think that whatever the American phrase is, I don't think that dog hunts.
And so far, neither of them are questioning the decision not to bail out Lehman Brothers, and we have to leave it there with John Authors, investment editor at the Financial Times. Thank you very much. We'll see what happens through the day with all of this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.